Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. If you're listening to us in the United States, unless you live in Southern California, Phoenix, or Florida, it's cold out there. I knew that this was going to be a trade-off when I moved out of California and came to Texas. Now, Texas is known more for its hot weather than its cold weather, but you do get cold snaps here. Right now here in Dallas-Fort Worth area, this weekend, it's going to be feeling like Bismarck or, you know, northern Minnesota sometimes. Although a lot of those people who live in the northern states would say, oh, be quiet, you're not even dropping below zero, you baby. Well, I'm not a big fan of it, but at least it's only for a short while. So in any case, my commiserating to everyone else in the U.S. who I think really anything below 30 degrees, when it's below freezing, you know, not below zero, when it's below freezing, it's not great out there. But hey, that's winter. And so, I mean, my kids, I do miss the California weather, but I remember growing up, actually, I grew up in Southern California until I was about 10 years old, and I never really traveled outside of the state. So it was weird. I would read these stories, for example, like if you grow up in Arizona or Southern California as a kid and you never travel, one of the weird things is you'll read stories about snow and ice. Like there's all these stories about kids playing in the snow or skating on ice rinks. And it just seems like a total fantasy. I mean, you know, it's real, but it's weird reading about these things and never ever actually having experienced like snow or ice outdoors. So that's what my kids are getting a little bit of a taste of that here. You might be getting way more of a taste of it wherever you are. In any case, that's just a short weather update here on Free For All Friday. But today we are not talking about weather. We might talk about weather in a future Free For All Friday episode, because on Free For All Fridays, we talk about whatever I find to be interesting, what's on my mind, and to share with you all, and you might find it to be interesting as well. So today I wanted to talk to you about a subject. It's a bit of a sensitive subject for some people, and it's a mature subject matter. So if you have small children, I know people who put on Free For All Fridays for their families to listen to, for their children to listen to, when it's, you know, fun episodes, even disaster episodes sometimes are considered okay for certain families. And that's great, or like the Disneyland episodes. This is not necessarily an episode I feel comfortable with small children listening to. I mean, I'm not going to talk about anything graphic, but it's mature subject matter. So listener, be advised. No, I want to talk about the subject of affair-proofing your marriage, because a friend confided in me that their sister, her marriage is now on the rocks because she had cheated yet again. She's a serial adulterer. And I was listening to this story and it's just heartbreaking and for the children that are involved. And it just fills me with so much sadness. But at the same time, I was thinking about it. This is not some kind of sin that is just for those people. It is a real and legitimate threat to all of our marriages. In fact, there may be many of you listening, a decent number of people listening, who either who have been involved in an affair in some way. You might have been the victim of infidelity, the victim of adultery. You might have committed infidelity. You might have committed adultery. You might have known somebody, you might have been your parents or siblings or someone close to you may have been involved in an affair and then it negatively affected your life. Wherever you're at, I want you to know that I want this to be a constructive episode. This is not an episode where I want to rant against people. I mean, a lot of people, if you have an embarrassing, shameful problem, you don't want to go to someone whose only purpose in talking to you is to make you feel more ashamed. Now, shame in and of itself is not a bad thing. I think it was Jason Ever or Christopher West who put it this way. They said that shame was kind of an alarm inside of us that God created to let us know when we are being used by another person. Many times we feel ashamed. I mean, you think about it, when Adam and Eve, after they sinned, they realized that they were naked and they desired to cover themselves because they did not want to be the objects of the lustful gaze of other people. They did not want to be used by others. They felt ashamed. And so what's interesting is that even though our culture endorses sexual permissiveness and sexual libertinism, our culture is still generally against adultery. Like when somebody commits adultery, it usually is a scandal. Now, I think our culture is moving more and more away from that. But at least that's one thing we can find common ground with people on. Because some people say, why do you think sex outside of marriage is bad? Why do you think this kind of sex is bad? Why is sexual acts between two people who are of the same sex? Why are you Catholics so hung up on this stuff? I could turn it around on that person and say, why do you think adultery is such a big deal? Well, because you broke a promise in marriage. Yeah, okay. But do you think that people should be held to certain kinds of promises? If two people go into marriage and they promise to not eat meat, and one day you catch your spouse at McDonald's, you know, does that cause to divorce the marriage? No. In fact, you could say that was an unreasonable promise for something like marriage, to say neither of you are going to ever eat meat again. And in fact, I was reading an atheist, I'm not going to say who, but some of you, if you're more adept at things, might know who I'm talking about. An atheist who left his wife to pursue polyamory. He said, I'm a polyamorist. I can't be tied down to one woman. And he made the comparison of monogamy and marriage. I'm almost positive I read him doing this. He made that comparison on his blog, saying that expecting people to be faithful within marriage is as unrealistic as expecting people to hold to promises of veganism or vegetarianism in marriage. But our culture understands that sex is just different. Sex is special, and it communicates an important language of love. And I would say the Catholic perspective makes sense that what sex is for is the expression of marital love. And what marital love is the permanent and complete gift of self to another person. So, of course, adultery is horrible because you're lying with the most precious thing God gave us, the gift of the sexual act, and pledging this kind of lifelong permanent love to someone else in the act of adultery. So what is adultery? We need to contrast adultery with infidelity if we're going to understand affair-proofing one's marriage. So adultery is when a sexual act takes place between a married person and someone who is not his or her spouse. So if a married person has sexual relations with another married person, a person they're not married to, this other person could be married, this other person could be unmarried. That's what adultery is. Fornication is different. Fornication is when two people who are unmarried engage in the sexual act with one another, with a man and with a woman. And then, so we'd have adultery, fornication, and then homosexual acts, because the sexual activity that takes place between two men or two women, that is not the sexual act. It is the stimulation of sexual organs, but the sexual act is something that can only take place between men and women. So we're not talking about homosexuality or fornication today. We're going to talk about adultery and infidelity. So infidelity is kind of the on-ramp to adultery. Infidelity is when someone is unfaithful to their marriage vows, unfaithful to the marriage. Psychologists today will call a lot of instances of infidelity that are not technically adultery emotional affairs or emotional cheating. When you are seeking out emotional support, companionship that is inappropriate with another person that should be reserved only for your spouse, that would be infidelity. And usually infidelity is kind of the on-ramp to adultery. Now, adultery is something that the human race has struggled with ever since God gave us marriage from the time of Adam and Eve. The state did not give us marriage. The state recognizes marriage. God gave the human race the gift of marriage. That is why almost every single culture on earth has had something that you and I would recognize as marriage. They might celebrate the wedding rites differently. They might have different celebrations within it. But the idea that the culture recognizes and solemnifies the lifelong monogamous and ideally permanent union between a man and a woman that unites them to one another and unites them to any children that proceed from their union, that is what marriage is. God gave it to us. We can't change it. We can try to change it. Our laws have tried to change it. But you can't change. The state cannot rewrite what marriage is any more than it can rewrite what humanity is or rewrite what justice or friendship are. These are basic goods God gave us. The state says the unborn child is not a human being. The state is just wrong. Says it's not a person. State is wrong. State says two men or two women can be married. The state is just wrong. And we have to persevere in showing people why that's the case. So, but this is something you look in scripture, something that has always plagued the human community. One of my favorite passages on adultery comes from the book of Proverbs, Proverbs 6, 23 through 33. It says this, "The reproofs of discipline are the way of life, to preserve you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adventuress." And by the way, of course, this is written to a young man who is tempted to adultery. Obviously, this is not a case where adultery is just about women who are temptresses and men are wholly blameless. No, that's not the case. In the case of adultery, there are two equally guilty parties here, the man and woman who are freely engaging in the sexual act. But the author of the book of Proverbs is really trying to speak to the young man who might be reading this to encourage him to not succumb to the temptation of adultery. So just keep that in mind. So it goes on in verse 25. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, and do not let her capture you with her eyelashes. For a harlot may be hired for a loaf of bread, but an adulteress stalks a man's very life. There are some funny things in the Bible. There is kind of that crude statement about prostitution. Why would, well, by the way, prostitution can fit into adultery, that if a married man, for example, has relations with someone he's not married to, it could just be a woman from work, it could be a woman he knows, or it could be a prostitute. It could be somebody that he pays to have sexual relations with him. Though the crude statement is that a man doesn't pay a prostitute for sexual relations, he pays her to leave afterwards, that there are no emotional, the idea here is that it's just a commercial transaction. And this happens, and it always boggles the mind. Do you remember when Hugh Grant got busted for contraception way, way back? I think he was on Jay Leno or Letterman, and they asked him, you know, what were you thinking? Because he was married to Elizabeth Hurley, who is a very beautiful British actress, I believe. She's very attractive. And he just went and found some prostitute, had relations. So that's why we have to get to the deeper roots of why people would choose adultery, that it's not just about sex. Sex does play a big part of it, but it's not just that. So it's interesting here in Proverbs 6:26, a harlot may be hired for a loaf of bread, but an adulteress stalks a man's very life. That what was that other movie? Fatal Attraction? I think it was Fatal Attraction, right? The guy has an affair with somebody, and then she kind of loses her mind and ends up stalking after him, and the bunny gets boiled in the pot. There was a terrible movie a long time ago based on a similar premise called Swim Fan, where this guy has cheats on his girlfriend with some other girl, and that girl he cheated with goes kind of crazy, tries to kill him, tries to kill his girlfriend. So a harlot may be hired for a loaf of bread, but an adulteress stalks a man's very life. And that happens sometimes in adultery. If a man sleeps with a woman that he is not married to, that woman, why would she do that? She might think, oh, maybe he'll leave his wife and be with me, and then we'll have a family together. Reality check, lady. If he's willing to be unfaithful to his current wife, what makes you think he's going to be faithful to you? You're living in a dream world if you think that. Let's continue on. Proverbs 6:27. Can a man carry fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Or can one walk upon hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. None who touches her will go unpunished. Do not men despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his appetite when he is hungry? And if he is caught, he will pay sevenfold. He will give all the goods of his house. It's like, hey, look, doesn't matter how you are feeling. Doesn't matter how you feel. You steal, you know, you do the crime. You do the time, you do the punishment here. And violating the sanctity of marriage, there are many husbands who would make you pay with your life. And that's not uncommon that happens to people. He who commits adultery, I love this, Proverbs 6:32. He who commits adultery has no sense. He who does it destroys himself. Wounds and dishonor will he get, and his disgrace will not be wiped away. So you think from that, who in the world would do this, but it's not uncommon. You probably know someone who has been the victim of an affair or has engaged in it, or you may have been personally involved. You think, yeah, I know, it's a stupid thing. But why do we end up doing stupid things? Why do we do stupid things in life? Not just adultery, but we all do stupid things. One baby step at a time. That's how we always do stupid things, right? We don't just say, I'm going to make a colossal mistake today. No, it's like when I do my disaster podcast. I do podcast episodes on Free For All Friday where I talk about disasters, and not like the ones you've always heard about, the Titanic, but like the Zeebrugge ferry disaster, the Hyatt Regency Skywalk collapse, you know, the Piper Alpha oil rig being destroyed in the North Sea. I love these shows and disaster episodes. And what they all have in common is that a disaster is usually not one catastrophic mistake. It is a series of small mistakes that leads up to a big catastrophic failure. But it's those without those small mistakes in the chain of causation, the catastrophe would not have happened. And that's what happens with adultery. So we'll get to those chains of mistakes here in a sec. But let me just give you a few demographics on adultery. This is according to the General Social Science Survey. It's put on the Institute for Family Studies website. It says, in general, men are more likely than women to cheat. About 20% of men and 13% of women reported that they had had sex with someone other than their spouse while married. But if you think about it, that could be way higher. That's just the people who are willing to fess up to it and own up to it. Even the ones who are willing to own up to it. 20% of men and 13% of women. What is that? Like, one out of five men and one out of seven women have admitted to having sexual relations with someone that is not their spouse. There's interesting on this website. I'll leave a link to it at trendhornpodcast.com. If you want to get access to this and other resources, become a premium subscriber, trendhornpodcast.com. You can leave your comments, reviews there. That's always helpful. It talks about the gender cheating gap. So when do people cheat at different ages and when is it more or less likely? So under the age of 30, women are more likely to cheat than men by a tiny amount. Under the age of 30, about 10% of men commit adultery. And this is just in the survey who report, 10% of men, 11% of women under the age of 30. Then when you go out from 30 until the end of life, it's always men who end up cheating more. So under 30, women slightly more than men. But over 30, you see this big divergence until you get to in the 50s and 60s, where it's closer to about 25% of men engage in adultery. But women, it's actually more. It's 11% in a woman's 20s, about 16% in a woman's 50s. So I think Laura offered this opinion, why that would be the case, is some people try to keep everything together for the kids. Like, oh, I can't have an affair. I have kids. And once the kids have moved out of the house, it's like, well, nothing to worry about now. But then it really starts to grow. Women, it's still even by age 70, 26% of men by age 70 have said they've committed adultery, and 13% of women by age 70. It doesn't drop for women. It drops to 6% by age 80, but men, it stays at around 24%. If you look at men, I was explaining to Laura why this is the case. From age 50 onwards, men are sometimes at their most attractive. If you think about it, you've got that George Clooney look to you, maybe, and you're successful, you're established, you have your career, you own your home, you're more of an established individual. Whereas you've got guys in like their 20s, they're just like, please don't leave me. I promise I'll get a promotion soon. I don't know why a guy in their 20s still sounds like a 15-year-old, but that amuses me. What doesn't amuse me, of course, is all of this adultery going on, because it ruins marriages, it ruins children, it leads to divorce. It's an absolutely horrendous thing. So what do we do? What do we do to protect ourselves from this? Well, the very first thing we have to do, probably the most important thing, and I'm saying we here in the plural, not you or y'all, I'm saying we, because none of us are above this. Absolutely none of us are above this. The second you think that, oh, that would never happen to me, you have put the target on your back. The devil wants to destroy your marriage. Well, here's the thing. One of the things, even when I was considering becoming Catholic, someone said this to me once. Maybe it was Peter Kraft. He didn't say it to me, I guess. I read it in a Peter Kraft book, and it felt like he said it to me, to convince me of the reality of the devil. Only the devil can make it the case that people are tempted to have sex with a person they're not married to and tempted to not have sex with the person they are married to. Because the devil hates the marital act. He hates the gift of sexuality God gave us. He loves when we misuse it. He loves when we distort this wonderful gift God gave us. But he absolutely hates the marital act. So if you want to make the devil completely upset, my advice to married couples: fully and freely and faithfully give yourselves to one another in the marital act. Enjoy it, because it makes the devil really upset. Someone should make a meme out of that. So that's why the devil always tries to get married couples to not have marital relations with one another. St. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 even advises married couples, do not abstain from sexual relations for an inordinate amount of time unless there's a compelling reason, like you want to devote yourselves to prayer, is the example that Paul uses. But there could be other reasons. After childbirth, a woman is healing from childbirth, or someone could be sick, or there could be, you could be staying at your in-laws' house and the walls are quite thin, or it's just not appropriate. But Paul makes it very clear that when married couples abstain from the sexual act or use it as a spiteful weapon, withholding, whether you're a man or a woman. That's why in 1 Corinthians 7, verses 3 through 4, it says, the husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not rule over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not rule over his own body, but the wife does. That was very unusual to see in the ancient world, to speak about husbands and wives having mutual ownership over each other's bodies in marriage. Now, it's very important when people hear this, there are the two extremes. There is using withholding sex as a weapon of spite against a spouse. That is wrong. But it's also wrong to take the marital debt, the idea of mutual conjugal rights, and say to demand sexual relations, even when it is not in the spouse's best interests, and to essentially use the spouse for sex under the guise of the marital debt. So I could maybe do a whole episode just on that, but I would just say, look, be gracious and respectful of one another in marriage to find the boundary of exercising the marital act in a healthy and holy way. So in any case, coming back to our main point, you have to stop and recognize you and I, are not above this. The devil wants to destroy our marriage. We're under attack, and we have to put up the defenses. So what can we do then to prevent affairs from happening? I guess I'm in an economics mood recently. You know, I did the economics roundtable and the debriefs. So the way I tried to frame the issue here and looking at the practical tips would be cutting off demand and cutting off supply. So in order to prevent affairs, the best thing you can do is to try to cut off the demand for the affair or adultery that may be coming from within yourself or myself. Cut off any source for a temptation to infidelity. We need to cut off the demand, but also another practical tip is to cut off the supply. Although, honestly, you could probably apply this to any kind of sin. If you struggle with alcoholism, you struggle with greed, you struggle with drunkenness, struggle with gossip, we all struggle with different sins. And there's two ways to look at struggling with a sin. We can manage the demand we have for the sin, our temptation towards it, and how to manage it and curtail it, and then cutting off just the supply so that the sin is not present and we won't engage in it. So for example, if somebody is addicted to pornography, one easy way to help overcome the sin of pornography is to cut off the supply of pornography, either getting rid of the internet, although in a practical sense, we need internet as a utility as much as electricity and water for many people. Many people work remotely. They need internet. So installing something like not a filter, because you're going to beat the filter, you're going to turn the filter off, but something like an accountability software like Covenant Eyes that reports the websites you go to an accountability partner. That would help there in cutting off the supply. And if you know that people are looking at what websites you're going to, that will also help cut off the own demand that you have. So you can do it with any sin, but I think you can apply this for adultery. So how do we cut off the demand for adultery? Well, first, you need to nip fantasies in the bud. A wise man once said, affairs start in the head, not the bed. Think about it. An affair, no one's ever like, oh, I'm just hanging out one day and let's just come over into this utility closet and engage in sexual relations. And there are some people who might just engage in sex on the spur of the moment. They got issues they got to see a therapist about. But for most people, most affairs, I think the most common place that affairs happen are at work, in the workplace. And that kind of makes sense because you develop intimate relationships with other people. They see you at your best. You know, you've showered, you put on your nice dress clothes, you know, you put on a good face when you're at the office. People there see you at your best, and you're willing to exchange the most pleasant relations with each other, just some pleasant conversation, pleasant attitude, because you're not going through the thick of it all the time like you are with your spouse. You might take your spouse for granted. But at work, you have more willpower to engage in these pleasantries. And so you create this kind of fantasy of who you are and of who that other person is. And then that fantasy of that intimate relationship you have, like, oh, I can talk to this person. I can talk to them about anything. And you start to think about, oh, well, what if I were married to that person? What would it be like? And it's affairs start in the head, not the bed. You got to nip the fantasies in the bud. And so in that case, if you have a fantasy about another person, you can use it as an opportunity. I was listening to a podcast on affair-proofing one's marriage, and the host said, use the fantasy as an opportunity. Don't just say, I'm not going to think about it. Say, wait a minute. Why am I fantasizing about sexual relations? Why is it with this person and not that person? What is it about this person that makes me want to fantasize? And you can do a self-inventory to say, okay, well, what do I feel is missing in my marriage that I feel like I have to go somewhere else to have those needs satisfied. So you can use a fantasy as a opportunity for self-reflection. And then you can fantasize about your own spouse to say, well, what would be the ideal I would want with my spouse? And then you have to do an inventory about whether that fantasy is realistic or not for your spouse. And also to think, well, if I could be the perfect spouse, what would my spouse want? So that goes to my next tip. So it's not just nipping fantasies in the bud. When a fantasy happens, use it as an inventory to say, hey, which of my needs are not being met? And I'm not saying that, I'm not saying that affairs happen because one spouse didn't meet another spouse's needs. That could happen in some abusive or dysfunctional relationships, where if you have one spouse who is abusive and dysfunctional, the other spouse may feel entitled to, or they have a right to seek out having their emotional or physical needs met by somebody else. But two wrongs don't make a right. Just because you're mistreated doesn't mean you have the right to mistreat your spouse and mistreat this other person by involving them in an affair. But the needs that are not met could be your own needs. It could be that, you know, maybe I'm not taking care of myself. I'm not exercising. I'm not eating right. I'm not getting sleep. I'm running myself ragged and I'm looking out in the world to get a quick fix to feel better. And this happens to all kinds of things. We're not taking care of ourselves. And so we think drugs, alcohol, driving to In-N-Out Burger and then going over to Nothing Bundt Cakes to get something. Don't judge me. Don't judge me. Nothing Bundt Cakes are delicious. They're absolutely delicious. My wife, though, she has caught me. She has caught me. I'll wake up in the morning and she's standing in the kitchen. She'll say, where'd you go last night? I said, I was just out. She says, did you go see her? What do you mean? You know who I'm talking about. Wendy? I said, no. It was McDonald's. I went over to see McDonald's. I'm sorry. And she's holding the bag. She's holding the bag because I threw it away in the trash under the sink. I even tried to put paper towels on top of it. And she caught me. We think, oh, we shortcut our lives. So our needs are not being met. We're not praying. We're not eating right. We're not sleeping right. And so we get out of balance. And then we try to find things in our world, in the world of the flesh, whether it's food, drink, drugs, alcohol, sex, with other people, pornography, to get that quick fix to feel better. But I've said before that sin is a shortcut to happiness that never really satisfies. That's why people sin. They want a shortcut to being happy, but it doesn't satisfy. So we need to be able to make sure if our needs are not being met, we have to have an honest conversation with our spouse and maybe even involve counseling if our spouse is being abusive or dysfunctional, or if we're being the abusive and dysfunctional ones, or if we're just not taking care of ourselves. Also, just be aware in the relationship, it could be deteriorating because this happened to me. You take the relationship for granted. And one thing that's hard in marriage is understanding your spouse has a different temperament than you. So you might feel frustrated to think like, my spouse feels unloved, but I'm doing all these things to love my spouse. And why don't they see that? Well, you might have a different love language. Look up the 5 love languages. I can't remember them all. I think it's like physical touch, quality time, words of affirmation, acts of service, and gift giving. And those are the 5 primary ways people show love to each other. But people have different love languages. So it's good to do an inventory to find out your spouse's love language, because this happens to Laura and I. And you have a different love language for giving love and receiving love. So my love language for giving love is usually, I would say it's acts of service. And Laura's love language, I think hers would be words of affirmation. She is great at praising people, typical sanguine. But I'm more about acts of service. So Laura sometimes might feel unloved because I haven't doled out the compliments as much as she does. And I might be confused because I think, wait a minute, I stayed up until midnight going around the house and taking care of as many chores as I could before I went to bed. That way Laura could wake up and it was all taken care of. And that's good. And Laura is very appreciative of that. But that's not her love language. If I don't tell her that I love her, she's doing a great job with the children. And what's hard is I do feel this way. She's doing a great job with our kids. But if I don't tell her that, she doesn't know I feel that. She doesn't know that I appreciate her. She doesn't feel loved. And it goes the other way, that when women sometimes fail to understand a man's love language, that the man might feel unloved. Or there's a great book called His Needs, Her Needs. Affair Proofing Your Marriage, His Needs, Her Needs, Building an Affair Proof Marriage by Willard Harley Jr. And what Harley Jr. says in that book is that what women want above all else is to feel loved, but what men want above all else is to feel respected. that when men feel disrespected, that they feel like they're not considered, that their accomplishments, their work, it's not valued. And this is women too, obviously, for their work at home or their work and their jobs. But there really is a difference. So look at the book, His Needs, Her Needs. Especially when women feel unloved and men feel disrespected. Of course, men need love, women need respect, but men and women are different. And so we have to be cognizant of that when we're making sure that we are providing for the needs of our spouse, and our spouse needs to be cognizant of that with us. And then even if you're not married, this is important advice to consider in relationships you might have that lead up to marriage. It's something you can consider if you have married friends or married relatives to offer a helping hand, especially if they're a married couple with children, especially with small children. They might feel just completely overwhelmed and their needs are not being met. So if you are an unmarried person listening to my podcast, that may be a cross for you. You may feel like, well, I wish I was married. Why is God allowing me to be unmarried? And your married friends may have their own crosses in marriage. Like, God, why am I carrying this cross in marriage? Well, in Galatians 6:2, St. Paul says to bear one another's burdens. So the married couple might need to provide companionship for the unmarried person. And the unmarried person might be able to provide acts of service to ease the load, the cross that the married couple are carrying. That's why Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, he talks about the body. We are a body with many parts, and all the parts serve one another. If one part of the body of Christ is glorified, the whole body is. If one part suffers, all of the parts suffer. So that would be understanding cutting off demand. And I would say that's the primary thing, that we want to be masters of our passions. We will all be tempted. Temptation is not a sin. Giving into temptation is a sin. So how do we manage temptation so that they are a nuisance rather than a slave driver? That's what we have to do in cutting off demand. And ultimately, by having our focus fixed on God, so meeting our needs physically, emotionally, but also spiritually and sacramentally, when your prayer life slacks, when receiving the sacraments starts to wane, we feel that. When we lose our connection to God, we will try to fill that void in our life. We will try to fill that void with earthly pleasures, including many pleasures that are not good for us. So I think cutting off the demand is probably the primary thing we can do to affair-proof our marriages. But cutting off supply is also a very practical thing to prevent, especially the act of adultery from taking place. Remember, though, affairs start in the head, not the bed. Then it starts in casual conversations. And there's a fine line. Doesn't mean that I'm saying that men should never talk to people, to women that they're not married to. That's not a practical or healthy way to live in life. But you can have practical guidelines that, you know, men are going to have relationships, professional relationships with women they work with. Women are going to have professional relationships with men that they work with, or people you meet at a co-op, people you meet at play dates, at other homes, within the neighborhood, you know, whatever it may be. You're going to have at least acquaintances that are the opposite sex. So how do you keep that from becoming an affair? Well, I think it's about recognizing where things that are harmless and innocent, and you know this, you get this feeling you're straying into danger territory. You can ask yourself, would my spouse be okay standing here while I have a conversation about this subject with this individual? And that's really a golden rule right there. If you had to hide it from your spouse, it's probably infidelity, or at least it's leading up to infidelity. So remember, infidelity is not the same as adultery. It's being unfaithful to the marriage in general. And so it starts innocently enough, you know, confiding, especially confiding in problems you have with your marriage to an opposite sex coworker. That is a red flag right there. Or feeling like you want to have a lot of contact with this individual at all different hours all the time, and you feel like you have to hide it from your spouse, then that's going to be a problem right there. Another thing to watch out for is social media. Social media is something that can be very dangerous. There's a growing rise in divorce cases. Many divorce lawyers say that they include in the divorce proceedings messages from Facebook, from Twitter, from Instagram, that they share that are things that lead up to adultery and infidelity. Because before engaging in a affair, you know, it would be hard to find these moments alone with another person. But now with electronic communication, we can do that by text message. We can do that on Twitter. We can do that on Instagram. You can find yourself alone with a person you're not married to very easily. So the key here would be, if you're alone with them in a virtual setting, like in an email or a text message, Just be open and transparent with your spouse and don't do things there that you would not do in front of your spouse. If you would send a basic work email in front, if you wouldn't mind your spouse seeing a basic boring work email to an opposite sex coworker, things are fine. If there's something in there that has flirtatious language or weird stuff in it and you wouldn't want your spouse to see it, you've hit a danger zone and you need to set up a barrier here. And you probably need to find someone, a same-sex confidant, somebody who has your best interests at heart, or even a priest or a religious leader, member of the religious life, whoever it may be. Somebody you can trust with confidentiality to hold you accountable in this dangerous situation. But above all else, you have to have an absolute no-go zone that you will not be alone with a person that you are attracted to or you have mentally considered having sexual relations with. That is an absolute no-go. You cannot say, oh, well, we're just going to hang out in this hotel and we're just going to watch a movie, or I'm just going to hang out at their house while their spouse is away. We're just talking. Nothing's going to happen. Danger. The klaxon bells need to go off. Like the ones they have on the submarine. You cannot be alone. I mean, you should be very hesitant to be alone with anyone of the opposite sex. There may be occasions where that happens and you'll have to take safeguards that are appropriate with your particular condition. But I would say that it's an absolute no-go in every single situation that if you are tempted to have sexual relations with someone, you cannot be alone with that person, because that's where things could completely fall apart. So I would say that 20% of what we do to prevent affairs is cutting off the supply with practical rules and guidelines, but that's not enough in and of itself. Jesus even said that the person who lusts after another commits adultery in his heart. So even if you set up the physical rules so that you're not physically cheating, if you're living a rich fantasy life involving cheating, Jesus says that's as grave as adultery. But even still, even if you're begrudgingly saying, oh, I wish I could just have an affair, but I know that's wrong. I know I shouldn't do it. So I'm just going to begrudgingly put up these rules so nothing bad happens. That's not ideal, but it's a stepping stone to perfect Christian charity. The Catechism says in paragraph 1770, moral perfection consists in man's being moved to the good, not by his will alone, but also by his sensitive appetite. As in the words of the psalm, my heart and flesh sing for joy to the living God. So obviously it's not ideal if the only reason you're not committing adultery or engaging in lust is because you're afraid of hell or you're afraid of what your spouse is going to do. And some people might be more afraid of the latter than the former. That's not ideal. That's what we would call imperfect contrition. That would be sorrow for sin because of fear of punishment. It's not ideal, but it's a stepping stone. It's a stepping stone to forgiveness, to contrition, and ultimately to Christian charity. It's the step on the way that ideally we want to affair-proof our marriages, not because, oh, I don't want to get caught, I don't want all the hassle, I don't want to go to hell, I don't want my spouse to kick me out, I don't want to lose custody of my kids. Those are all valid reasons, but the ideal is I don't want to offend my spouse, I don't want to hurt the person I pledged to love for my whole life, and above all else, I don't want to offend my God. My God, I am sorry for all my sins and choosing to do wrong. I have sinned against you, whom I should love above all things. And I firmly intend with your help to do penance. You know, I should love above all things, even my spouse. If you love your spouse more than God, your marriage is going to fall apart. You cannot idolize. No human person can provide our spiritual needs that only God can provide for. But when we love God above all else, everything else will be put into practice. We'll love our spouse, we will love our children, we will love our neighbor, we'll even be able to love our enemies. So I hope this provided you some practical tips and insights. If you want access to some of the resources I mentioned, go to trendhornpodcast.com, become a premium subscriber. Also consider leaving a review at iTunes and Google Play. I love reading the reviews. It's always fun to see. It gives me good constructive feedback and it lets people know more about the podcast. I hope that was helpful to you. I will mention the book that you could get. I think was really good. His Needs, Her Needs by Willard Harley Jr., Building an Affair-Proof Marriage. I'll also leave other resources at trendhornpodcast.com for your edification. Thank you all so much, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content, For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.